Rabina Shlita asked me to speak about a very important and sensitive topic. And since I'm a very loyal when I come to this Beis Medrash, it's Rabina's Beis Medrash, I have to do what I'm told. I will do what I'm told. He asked me to speak about Mesorah, which means tradition, halachic tradition, and give some parameters as to how this developed, how it applies to you and to me, what are its boundaries, when can we say that there are different options, and when do we say that something is outside the list of proper options. Let's start from the very beginning. Moshe kibbol Torah miSinai Mesorah LYoshua. Hence the word Mesorah. Mesorah LYoshua. Moshe gave over tradition to Yoshua ben Nun. This tradition, Rabbosai, was given from one generation to another. The Rambam lists off many chachmei ha-mesorah in his introduction to the Yad HaChazakah. As a matter of fact, if you give me a Rambam, I'll just the very beginning, first. That's good enough. Fine. Thank you. The Rambam says that there are traditions and there are chachmei ha-mesorah which go from Moshe Rabbeinu to Ravina Ravashi. Esof gedolei chachmei Yisrael amatikim Torah shebal peh v'shegozru gzeiros v'tkinu takonos v'nigu minhagos u'poshle gzeirosam v'takonosam v'minhagosam v'chol Yisrael v'chol makobos v'al shvosam. And he gives you the whole list. He rattles off 40 generations from Ravashi to Moshe Rabbeinu. Yeah, the whole list is here. This is what's called the Mesorah. These are great people, Gedolei Hadoros. But it's important to understand that aside from the unique individual greatness of these 40 people, they represented a certain institution. And the institution was, for most of it, the Beis Nagadol, the Sanhedrin. That was the final word. We read about this in Parshas Shoftim. Ki polim chodava, la'mishpat, ben dom ledom, ben din ledin, ben nega lenega. All the areas of halacha, you don't know what the din is? The kamta oli salamoka. You go to the highest court, the Sanhedrin. The Rambam writes in Hilchos Mamrim that at that point there were very few opportunities to have long-standing machlokas. There could have been a machlokas for a short period of time. Two people in some city have a disagreement in halacha. The kamta v'lisa. As long as it takes to get from, I don't know, from Be'er Sheva, from Tveria, just give famous cities that existed even then, to get to Yerushalayim, they're fighting. They got to Yerushalayim. The Bezdin has a, either tells them on the spot what it is. If they're not sure, they deliberate. They make a majority vote. 36-35 vote could happen, right? 71 people. And that's it. That is the Psak Halacha for that time. Now, that Psak Halacha need not extend forever. There's a vacancy in the Supreme Court. And a different person is placed in the court. And that person is chosen by the other members. And he changes the vote. And the majority can change. And the Halacha changes. Yesterday was trade, today it's kosher. No contradiction. Yesterday the majority said this, today the majority says that. If you have meat left over in the freezer, you can't eat it anymore. You had it yesterday. 100% was put in the half. Today not. The majority changed. I mean, it sounds wild to us, but that's all we had in Sanhedrin, which majority rules. Even after the Sanhedrin, Sanhedrin ceased to exist. A significant amount of time before the redaction of the Gemara, there was still opportunities for the Chachamim to come together to establish rules which apply to all of Israel. And the most famous one is, of course, Chasimas HaTavad. That's why Ravina Rav Ashi, the last of the 40, Rav Ashi number 40. What was unique about them, writes the Rambam? All, or nearly all, of Chachmi Yisrael got together. And they have the ability to pask in Shilas, and no one can disagree with them. Whatever is kapaskin in the Gemara, Asa Mutta Chaya Potter, none of us can disagree. We may have high IQs, we now have computer searches, nothing else. You can't go against the Gemara. Impossible. However, right, it's the same Rambam, and this is very important, this is exactly the point of challenge. What happened after Rav Ashi? Oy, Nispazu Yisrael b'chol arotos pizu yeser. The Jews were dispersed. They went to all different islands and faraway corners of the world. And there were many wars going on, and you couldn't travel. And even Talmud Torah was lessened. There used to come in thousands and ten thousands. And there it's Shalom Bavel. No more. Every town, a couple of people learning. That's it. Every Bezin, since the time of the end of the Gemara, can only rule for its own constituency. Whoever appointed them, that's who they have to listen to them. But no one else. If I live in Be'er Sheva, and it's also Bezin in Tveria, what they say does not affect me whatsoever. It affects people in Tveria. My Bezin Be'er Sheva affects people living in Be'er Sheva. Everyone follow me? This is what the Rambam is saying. Since Chasimas HaTalmud, no Bezin, no Rav, no matter how good he is, how smart, brilliant, can say something which is binding completely on all of Klal Yisrael. It hasn't existed since then. Clear so far? Now question. Does that mean that as long as you're not arguing with the Gemara, any guy can say whatever he wants, do whatever he wants, as long as it's not going against the Gemara? What do you think? Yes or no? Who thinks yes? Hope not. Some people think that way. It's not against the Gemara. Do whatever I want. The fact that all the Chachmi Yisrael said differently, that doesn't deter me. And the Rambam says that. That's not binding on anybody. Well, first of all, he says that what one Rav says is not binding on another Rav's town. But every person, Rabbi Osai, is supposed to fulfill the mandate of Mishnah Navas. Aseh lecha Rav. Everyone should have a Rav, and he follows that Rav. Now, of course, that's easier said than done. Not so easy to have a Rav. Today's world, the big Rabbanim are often inaccessible. You have to go through them through intermediaries. Doesn't always work so well. But to the best of your ability, you have to have a Rav, because you can't pass the things yourself. What do you mean? I look on the internet. I hear this all the time. I look up on the internet. Everything on the internet. I'll follow the internet. I asked him, my dear friend, if you have something that bothers you, and you go on the internet, do you ask the doctor? No, I don't ask the doctor. The internet passes for me what I have. You're mad. You're crazy. Pikuach nefesh. You can imagine the guy is his chest pains. Oh, look on the internet. Shem Yirach. What do you mean? It's all there. Everything's there. Look, it's all there. Every term is there. Everything. You have to have a doctor. So too. Everything on the internet. All the whole shilas and shuvas and everything's there. You have to have a rav. You have to have a masorah. I was introduced to the Talmud of Rav Soloveitchik Zichrono Livracha. I don't fancy myself to be in the list of his devoted and outstanding Talmidim who learned with him for so many years and who are spending their lives reviewing his Torah on a daily basis. I don't consider myself in that category at all. Although, I certainly did learn it this year. I learned it for 5 years. I learned it for 2 summers in Boston, which is a plus, which is also very important. How can we not say it? That's where I got to know the Kaddish, Rav Moshe Twersky, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, who was Bar Mitzvah at the time. It's too painful to talk about right now. My Rebbe would constantly refer to the concept of Mesorah. He had to pick one word to be his, you know, his theme is Mesorah. Of course, you understand, he had a particularly glorious family Mesorah. His father, his grandfathers were the Dolei Yisrael, going back in previous generations, of course, to the Tziv, to Chaim Volozhin, and this is, he had a very, very special family. But he said every person, even from no matter what family he comes from, has to have a Mesorah. And he banged it home to us all the time. That has to be a Mesorah. A Mesorah. And a Mesorah means that there are Chachmei Mesorah in every generation. And these Chachmei Mesorah often will disagree with each other. And there's no resolution. Because ever since the Gemara was redacted, not every argument can be resolved completely. I'm reading from the Rambam. Most people that have to pass Kanasha, they don't open the Rambam. Where do they go? Where do they go? Shulchan Aruch came a number of centuries after the Rambam. Rabbi Yosef Karo on his part, the Rambam, Pashkanatim on his part. If you look in Rabbi Yosef Karo's introduction, it's called Beis Yosef, towards the end, he raises the question, how can I write a book, a cookbook? There's so many different opinions out there. Those who preceded him. He answers, we're going to rely on a majority of the pillars, the Amudim, Shekol Beis Yisrael Nishan Aleihem. That the entire house of Israel relies and leans on those pillars. Who are they? The Rif, the Rambam, and the Rosh. He spells them out. As a rule, if there's a majority within that court of three, which he created, they have these dream teams, you know, other areas of the world which I don't want to get involved in. Dream teams. We had a dream team. These three people that never saw each other. We had a dream team. The Rif, the Rambam, and the Rosh. And he follows the majority. But you know, he didn't make it up. In his view, Kol Beis Yisrael Nishan Aleihem. So remarkably, Lo Bashamayimi, Hashem does not make decisions, as it were. He gave the Torah to people, to human beings. Kol's family at 71, their word was final. Even after that, till the Chasim HaSatavot, the word is final. Since then, nothing is final. Beis Yisrael decides who the Gedolim are going to be. Rabbi Yosef Karo picked three. There are more, right? Excuse me, Rabbi Yosef Karo. You picked a court which has two Sfaradim and one Ashkenazi. Very nice for you. But we have different customs. And he rattles off a whole bunch of other people. There were Tosis and the Mordechai. And he passes the Ashkenazi Psak. And they sit right next to each other on the same page in Shulchan Aruch. You know that. So they're different Mesoras. Sfaradim follow theirs, Ashkenazim follow theirs. That's the reality. So what if a person will say, I'm not going to follow either? It doesn't matter to me that the Shulchan Aruch said such and such. The Chaber, Ravol, agree. I have a different Shita. There's some Rishonim that argue with both Mechab and Rambam. I want to follow them. There's always a Das Yochad and many things, but a minority opinion somewhere or other. I'll follow the minority opinion. This is not to be done. Unless there is a Mesorah from Gedolei Yisrael, every generation has them, to follow an opinion opposed to Mechab and Rambam, that can happen. The Shach did it in Yerodea many times. The Vilna Gaon did it many times. Many of their rulers were never accepted. People accepted the Mechaber Ramo, not the Vilna Gaon. Sometimes the Vilna Gaon was accepted. Mishnah Berurah has a lot to say about this. But just you and I can't just go take off. Well, we'll decide, we'll do what we want. Not against the Gemara. The Rambam said, I don't respond to the Gemara, so do whatever I want. Can't do that. That's number one. Number two, and the Rabbi is equally insistent about this, we have to believe that the Mesorah that we have is correct, and the practitioners of the Mesorah are seeking the truth. There can be more than one truth. Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim. We have to believe that the Chachmei Mesorah are seeking the truth to the best of their ability and are not hiding behind their authority to promulgate views which they themselves know are not true for whatever supposed agenda is attributed to them. As a matter of fact, the Rambam writes in Hilchos Teshuvah that there are some people that unfortunately they're not really full members of the Mesorah community. Some of them even unfortunately can even lose a chelek and all of Abba. Very serious. Someone who denies the Mesorah, denies Moshe Rabbeinu, denies the explanations of the Torah, Torah Shabbat Peh, says things have changed. Things have changed. That's a very, very serious problem. Now, of course, halachas do change. A, there are innovations of Chachmei Yisrael, Takonis, Chanukah is coming up not that long a time. B, very often we say the facts change. If the facts change, the halacha remains the same, but the practice is different. But again, this is given over to Chachmei HaMesorah to determine whether these changes are really of significance. So the Rambam says that one who is, in his terms, Hakofa Perusha, Utosh about Peh, says, I don't believe it. I'll put my tefillin there right here between my eyes. We don't know anybody like that. It used to be some kind of a Karoi Shul, someone else said he's still here. Is there someone?
There's still guys, though.
Yeah. There's still it's fun like this. So they're already, of course, many generations there. That's Ram calls Tina Shanishba. But yeah. Then he has a phrase. V'hamakish magideho. What does that mean? Those two words. V'hamakish magideho. Rabbi explained, he thinks it means that they deny the authority of the Magide HaMesorah. Because they say that either they're incompetent or they're intellectually dishonest or some of the other things that are thrown at us by some of the modernists these days. The Rav was very upset about these trends which existed already in his day and only picked up steam more recently, unfortunately. Fine. You know, we believe there are no coincidences in life. Just yesterday, literally, at mincha time in our yeshiva, someone gave me a draft of a proposal by a certain group. It doesn't matter, the group doesn't matter. But among the things that you have to believe in to be part of this group, of course, Mamar Har Sinai, okay? But now that this question, the paragraph for ourselves, it's only one paragraph of eight, I want to read it to you. We are heirs to and participants in a millennia-old halachic process which is founded upon an unbroken chain of tradition from Sinai, and it continues until today, and which incorporates the Bible, the Talmud, Jewish law codes, responsive literature, and other authoritative works. Now there's a bracket. Why don't I don't know why. This process greatly emphasizes tradition and precedent, while also sanctioning the adaptation and application of Jewish law to new circumstances and evolving realities. I didn't write this. Halacha includes internal mechanisms which uniquely guide its responsible development by halachic authorities, and which create and thereby sanction multiple views on many issues, in accordance with the principle of Elu ve'elu divrei l'kiv chayim. We affirm that each such view, determined by an acknowledged halachic authority, deserves respect and consideration. What are they saying over here? Two things. One, there can be more than one legitimate opinion in halacha. Two, there can be illegitimate opinions in halacha. The first deserves our respect, even if we don't follow it. The second deserves to be outed. This is not legitimate. This is not something which we do. You'll find a rishon, you'll find the source, you'll find... You know, you can find things, you know, Chazal say, you can be the metayer es asheretz b'mem tes d'rochim. Find 49 ways to take a sheretz, just tell me, make a Torah. Mental gymnastics. It's not within the Mesorah. Sorry, it's not accepted. Now, I really want to open up the floor to questions, because that's the main point of this presentation. But I suspect, well, I did not speak to Rabbi Bina. Maybe I'm all wrong, but I have my funny suspicions. Rabbi Bina is concerned that some things have existed in our community recently, which he probably considers to be outside the pale of the Mesorah. I know Rabbi Bina quite well. I'll tell you one story we have.
One story?
A small little thing. A small little thing. I was witness to it. There was a wedding. Rabbi Bina was asked to read the ksuba. So we've read it many, many times. He looks at the ksuba. And in the ksuba, there's the name of the chosn and kala, their father's names, and their mother's names. Rabbi Bina refused to read the ksuba. He couldn't move. They said, you'll read the father's names. Nope. I will not give 1 inch. What's wrong? What's the big deal? What's the big deal? You know what the big deal is? It's against the Mesorah. My Rebbe said, based on the Pasuk, the Mishpachos and the Beis Avosam, that we are known by the names of our fathers. That's how we're called up to the Torah. That's how many other things are done that fashion. One of them is a ksuba, it's a legal document. He wouldn't budge. So my guess is that he's bothered by these kinds of things that you probably heard from him more than I do. But let me tell you, why maybe he asked me to speak about it. Because anyone come from my town? Anyone here from Riverdale? Nobody. No one's willing to admit to it. A couple of things that are going on there which I think probably bother him. Just last year, there was a responsum permitting a young lady to don tefillin in one of the local schools. And you know, I can write a tshuva also to allow it. No problem. It's a giving. Got a source here and a source there. But it hasn't been done in our community for 500 years at least. And to break with tradition. Articles have been written about it. Rav Shechter Shlita wrote about it. Rav Tversky Shlita, Rav Meir, wrote about it. I'm going to speak about it. Didn't write about it, I'm speaking about it. It's a break with tradition. I believe it's against Allah. I know it's about Hashkafa. I don't know. I have an expansive view of what halacha is. To me, halacha is not just black, let alone if you look at Shulchan Aruch, it says a woman shouldn't be wearing pronoun, it's boch and biyada. You have to stop her from wearing tefillin. It's more than that. It's a break with tradition. And these breaks, even if they're really fairly small, have a habit of snowballing. Rav Shechter often quotes the fact that when the reform movement started, what was the big first break? Something seems to be of zero consequence. He said they cut out the Kum Perker that we say on Shabbos in the morning. Kum Perker? Yes, Kum Perker. No, that's But that was the way it was. It was a sitter. No one ever touched the sitter. And they cut out the pack.
What do we need?
Reshe Galvasa, they honor the Bava. Bava, no one said Bava anymore. What is this? One thing leads to another. You know, you're not going to believe it, Reb Chaim. It's now 30 years. Next month is 30 years since five of the Rebbeim in the Yeshiva signed a piece of paper opposing what was then known as women's prayer groups. Which meant the women didn't want to come to shul with the men. They wanted to have their own thing. And they had their own thing. And of course, the centerpiece of it was Kriyas HaTorah by the women, for the women, of the women. And there were major problems raised by it. There was a debate in Riverdale, of course, which triggered this letter. And I was the young member of those who signed it. And the major point of that letter was against the Masara. We quoted that Rav Soloveitchik and Rav Moshe Feinstein. Those were the two Rabbanim that we looked to in our time and place. We're both opposed. You know, in many communities today, this innovation of 30 years ago or more is passé. Why should the women get an aliyah when the only women in the room? You can do better than that. If we have partnership minyan, what does that mean? The woman gets an aliyah and the men shul. Ta'amot. I have to call that, right? And there were a couple of learned articles written about it. A number of inhabitants of this holy city. Once again, I think it's wrong according to strict halacha, but the most egregious part is to break with tradition. And once you break with tradition, there's no end. There's no end. The Sora Moshe Kibbutz Torah Misina Mesora LeYoshua. Applies to this day. No one alive today thinks these Moshe or Yeshua or any of those people. We know our place. Part of Mesora is knowing your place. You know, I have to tell you, one of my family members called me up. Said, you know, someone with a new title of some feminine clergy wrote a piece. And she wrote that, you know, she thinks that a woman who's pregnant should no longer fast on Yom Kippur. Okay. So, you know, it's against the Mishnah, it's against the Shulchan Aruch, it's against
okay.
You know, if you want to find a reason for it, someone can find a reason. His main point was, forget her gender. She's 20-something years old. If a 20-something-year-old Kolnik, who's learned his whole life, get up and say something, she'd be thrown out of the Beis Medrash. Makiris Makomo. You should know your place. Know your place. These are matters to be considered by individuals who spend decades upon decades learning the Torah Hashem, the mastery of its depth, its breadth, its rhythm. There was even such a rabbi in Yerushalayim, in this city, who seemingly held that way. His name was Rabbi Yisrael Yaakov Fisher. That's what they say he said. Things are different, it's hot, and the women are weaker, whatever he said. He was from the Chachmei HaMesora. He knew Kol HaTorah Kula. Learned his whole life. He's a member of a bezin of Badat Yedei Charedis. And if he wanted to say something which others didn't accept, He had the credentials. What's going on? The credentials. It's called Makaris Makom. So yes, in theory, any Jew can argue at any psak given after Chasima Satama. But I emphasize in theory, not in practice. In practice, there's a hierarchy, there's a Mesorah. And yes, my Rebbe would often say that it's always Chiddush in Limud HaTorah. He was one of the most amazing B'chatshah Rebbe. He was so creative and so original. But all based on tradition. I want to say one Dvar Torah, and then I'll open the floor for questions. We mentioned before that we're, the next Yom Tov is Chanukah. So if you look in the Medrash Tanchuma, Tanchuma says in Parashas Noso that a person shouldn't say, I'm not going to keep Chanukah. After all, the Torah is not in the Torah. Don't say that, says the Medrash Tanchuma. Because you know, Yaakov Avinu did something very bold. He placed Ephraim before Menashe, and out of the birth order. Very bold, right? Original. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu endorsed it. Look at Parshas Naso. On the seventh day, the Nasi from Ephraim brought the carbon, and the eighth day, Menashe. So God in heaven, when he gave it to Moshe Rabbeinu the Torah, was endorsing a decision of Yaakov Avinu. So if Yaakov Avinu's words are so powerful that Hashem endorses them, Chachmei Yisrael, they say to light Chanukah candles, you better do it. That's the Medrash Tanchuma Parshas Noso. A little strange. What's the connection between this particular example and what does it teach us? I suggest as follows. There's a healthy skepticism, not wishing to act upon new laws and innovations of anybody. One of the cardinal principles is Torah lo temuchlef, is Torah never changing. But here's the distinction. If a member of the Chachmei HaMesorah, whose primary responsibility is to maintain and preserve traditions, decides that the circumstances require a bold act, somewhat different than what might be expected, then you have to listen. Yaakov Avinu was such a person. He did his best, v'shem avosai Avraham v'Yitzchak. That was exactly the broch he gave to those two grandchildren. He was there to preserve the tradition of his father and his grandfather. But, because of the specifics of Ephraim and Menashe, he felt he had to reverse the birth order. Give me the brachas. So too, the Chachmei HaMesorah who ordained the laws of Chanukah were dedicated primarily to preserving tradition. Once in a while, an amazing event such as Chanukah transpires, they introduce something new. But if someone is only interested in doing something new for its own sake, change for the sake of change, Chas v'Shalom, this must be rejected outside the Mesorah. Think about it for a minute, and this is why it's so fundamental and so misunderstood. Ephraim and Menashe represent different ideas. I assume you know Chumash and Rashi a little bit. Ephraim, Rashi says in the beginning of Parshas Vayechi, learned all day with his grandfather Yaakov. Menashe, what did Menashe do? Anyone remember what he did in Rashi says in Miketz? He was a diplomat, court interpreter, at his father Yosef's court. Different things. One was learning all the time, one was involved in worldly matters. Placing Ephraim before Menashe was Yaakov's way of saying that heavenly matters take priority over worldly matters. And when he was challenged by Yosef, he said, Yodati b'ni Yodati, Parshas Vayechi, Gam hu yelam v'gam hu yigdol. Yes, Menashe will be great, Ephraim will be great. What does that mean? So Rashi tells us. It's their descendants. Menashe's descendant was Gidon, Sefer Shoftim. Ephraim's descendant was Yeshua. Yeshua will be greater than Gidon. What does that mean? On a simple level, it means Ephraim was a person of this world. He was a diplomatic politician. And Gidon was a man of this world as well. He was a general, a military man. Ephraim learned all the time. And his descendant, Yeshua, though he was quite a military man as well, but he was primarily known as Moshe Kibbul Torah Nisina Mesorah Yeshua. He was the first of the Chachmi Mesorah to get the Torah from Moshe Rabbeinu, who got it from Hashem. So therefore, he's considered to be greater. But listen carefully. What was the greatness of Gidon? Gidon's greatness was, he was an original general. He was stuck, vastly outnumbered. What did he do? You know what he did? You want to say for Shoftim? He took lanterns and pitchers and chauffeurs. He made what they call over here the Davidka. Made a lot of noise and light, and all the enemy ran away. Pasuk says, Lech b'chol chakozeh v'oshad nesisro. Original strategy. Wow, this was great. Rabosai, what would happen if this battle was written up in the London School of Strategic Studies, and there was another fight between Gidon and the Plishtim, and he tried the same strategy again? What would happen? What would happen?
Yeah.
Get killed! If you fight the last war, it's a disaster. It's a little bit of the Yom Kippur War, a little bit of the last war, those who know what happened. This represents that in worldly matters, there are always new things, and we encourage new. It has to be new. And it's not only in the military sphere. We just celebrated, just last week, I think, before, the 25th anniversary of the fall of the Berlin Wall, which meant basically the end of the Communist Empire, the whole the Cold War. Bring that back from 30 years ago, bring it to the world today, you know, bring it back from the dead. Wow, where's the Cold War? Where's the Berlin Wall? Everything's changed around. There's so many different changes in the politics, in military strategy. The guns are different, the planes are different. Why are we limiting ourselves to politics and military? The world of technology. You guys all have email. You can bring it up for 30. What's email? I don't want to say the other words, but it's Facebook. I don't know what the words mean. But the internet, everything's new. Everything didn't have these things 30 years. They didn't have it. You're going to try to use a computer. I remember the first computer, I think, was in the 50s. I think it filled up a room this size, I think. It was called Univac, I think. It filled it this size. And it worked. Today, chip. The whole world changed. And we need the most recent military strategy and political and economic. Rabosai, how many people in this room plan to enter to the same field of Parnassa when they go into it to earn a living as their great grandfather 100 years ago? Probably was, if he came from Eastern Europe, probably was a great great grandfather by now. Maybe he was a tailor or a cobbler. Yeah, maybe owned a dairy, a grocery store. No? No one's going to do that? The world changed. And it changed within our professions. Law changed, medicine changed, psychology, everything's changing. All changing. This world is all about change, and you have to be ahead of the curve to succeed in any field. And that's why there are people who fail to distinguish, as I'm about to, and want change for the sake of change in the world of halacha as well. It's a fundamental error. Yoshua ben Nun. Why was he chosen to be the leader? Come here to see Moshe Rabbeinu. You know why? All he wanted to do was to change nothing. To reflect the glory of his mentor and master. Mo'azim Babasra. Pnei Moshe ki pnei Chama. Upnei Yoshua. My ancestor, Yeshua, Kipnei Levana. Doesn't just mean that Moshe was greater than Yeshua. It means Yeshua reflected the glory of Moshe Rabbeinu, as the moon reflects the sun. And that's why he was chosen. The Chazal said that even those who were more brilliant than he. Didn't matter. He was chosen because he is the perfect successor to one of them that wants to maintain and preserve. The rabbis in Germany, 19th century, when there were so many changes, they signed after Orthodox rabbis, Shomer Mishmeres HaKodesh. The man that was preserving the preserve of holiness in their cities. I once had someone in my community, married to a German family, why don't you change this? Change all the things. Why are you so stubborn? The person asked me. I said, Shomer Mishmeres HaKodesh. In this town of Riverdale. I'm trying my best. I'm not the rabbi of the whole town. Far from it. It's a little tiny sliver. But in my little sliver, I'm trying to fulfill this mandate that was given to us by the greats of 150 years ago. So they were doing it. They also weren't so successful. Our first came with 11 families to Frankfurt. And he built it up a little bit more. Yeah. Ephraim is before Menashe. Ephraim represents Torah and preserving and reflecting the glory of old. Menashe represents the worldly matters, always new. And I'll add you one more chiddush before I open the floor. This lies and inheres in the very names of Ephraim and Menashe. The word Menashe means, you read it in Kates, Nashani Elohim is called Amolav is called Beisavi. I forget everything. I moved away from everything. That's what Menashe represents in this world. Ephraim, Ki Ephrani Elohim be Eretz Anji. For the word pre, apple. The apple today is the same as the apple in Gan Eden. Almost. But basically the same apple. That's how you have to be in Torah. Some changes, yes. That's why the Medrash says we keep Chanukah because Yaakov Avinu, who was so intent on preserving tradition, he decided to switch around with Ephraim and Asher. We have to do it. The Hashem did it. Chachmi Yisrael was so intent on preserving tradition, decided to add Chanukah. You have to do it. But someone who doesn't understand this about the Mesorah, wants change for the sake of change, that's beyond the pale. I believe that this is the message that I was asked to give by the Rosh Hashiva. I didn't check with them in advance. If I'm wrong or I'm answering, they'll let me know, because maybe I was wrong. But I think so, knowing him a little bit. And I now open the floor for questions. First about my presentation. And if there's time afterwards, about anything you want. So first question about the presentation itself.